led me back to a large portion, 25%, even at Tiger 21, of their portfolio is in real estate. And so for that, the tortoise but not the hare means buying for cash flow. It means buying existing construction. It means not speculating, not gambling, not sliding the big stack all on green 24 and spinning the wheel.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big. Patrick Grimes is the founder of Passive Investing Mastery and Invest on Main Street. He's a best-selling author. He's had a strong recovery from the last recession. He's also an engineer and an adventure sports enthusiast. Patrick, I bet there's a dozen more things in there that are part of your bio that are really cool that you are involved in. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Glad to be here, Sam. I've heard a lot about you from my colleagues, and here we are finally connecting on your show today and on my panel on alternative investing tomorrow. So we're doing a deep dive together, back to back.
I'm looking forward to it. This will be great. Patrick, there are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So I started as a mechanical engineer graduate and stuck pretty true to the path for a while. But I got some advice early on that said, you know, the high tech space, I was doing machine design, automation, and robotics. And the owner of the company said, it's great. You're going to earn a lot. You're going to have a lot of fun, but it's a wild ride. Invest in real estate. Don't invest in high tech and put as much as you can as soon as you can. So that caused me to dump everything in real estate early on. Had a wild ride in real estate, actually. And so, but as I progressed in my career, I found my way back to it. And now we are a very large private equity firm. We have $500 million in holdings on the multifamily apartments, as well as some diversified energy funds. And we have a recessionary acquisitions fund, which is the exciting announcement where we can win from this recession as we see a bunch of great opportunities today, where I was in a losing position in 2009 and 10 previously.
Wow. Okay, man. There's so much here that I would love to take. So many rabbit trails we could go into here on your story. I just want to point out from the kind of the intro, you go to school, you get a mechanical engineering degree. It takes I would say an engineer. I love the engineers in our life. We need you, right? You're very, very important people in our world, but it takes them a while typically to come around to making a decision, because you are engineers. You study everything thoroughly and then make a decision. It sounds like you got out of school, got a job, and was like, sure, why not? We'll go get into real estate. What was that process like?
So the analysis paralysis thing is real, but I managed to make, in fact, I did the Do Zone podcast all about getting things done, and the guy picked on me for being an engineer the whole time.
Because I promise.
It took me... When I got the advice you needed to start investing in real estate, I treated it like I was going back into another course. Like I was taking electromagnetic static physics again, but I was doing it in real estate. So I was downloading guides, reading books, attending webinars, and I started learning about the highest returning deals. And so I wasn't very much interested in like conservatism that young. I was very much like, let's just figure out how to double and triple my money. And this was 2007, the market was never going to go down. Right. So I pulled the trigger and learned quickly the downside of downturns.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you really did. And that's painful. I mean, one of the questions, tell me if you agree or disagree with this and why, but one question I love to ask sponsors when I'm investing passively is, tell me about a time when you lost money. Just because I think it's one of those things, if somebody's never lost money, I have this theory that the first time they're going to lose money is when I invest with them. So I want to know, because I guess it instills some sort of confidence in me when someone's like, yeah, here's how I messed up. So what are some of those things that you are doing? And because what I really want to focus on today is, of course, your recessionary acquisition fund that you guys are launching. But how do those two, comparing that to your 08 to 2010 experience to what you guys are doing now, what are the lessons you learned and how are you positioning yourself differently now?
Well, it's a really great question because it's right at the heart of kind of who I am and my fiber. And I just spoke on it in San Francisco and I had a little bit more time than but Yeah, so back then I was looking for, again, the highest returning deal, and I had very limited cash. So I was trying to leverage it up as high as I could. And I even got to 90% loan to value.
Wow.
And I, in order to get the best terms, I personally guaranteed that loan, which meant I was risking every, I didn't know at the time what cross collateralization went, and signing on the loan myself meant that they could come after everything I personally owned. I was all in one asset, right? Didn't have any diversification. I just was going big. And because I was trying to get really high returns, I wasn't buying for cash flow. I wasn't buying something that supported itself, that going in, if the market crashed, I could just ride it out, right? And I bought pre-development, not even development, pre-development. So a couple layers of speculation. And I learned that speculation is different than investing. Buying for cash flow is different than speculation. And moving forward, it did take me a number of years to recover. Emotionally, obviously it was a humiliating experience, but financially, the property went, I had to negotiate debt forgiveness. The property went through foreclosure. My credit got pummeled. I was able to escape bankruptcy. A lot of people did get, and maybe it would have been better if I'd done that. It would have been better if I'd done that, but I was able to escape it because I didn't want to go that route. I got a master's in engineering and business, started producing a lot of income again. And then I was following the breadcrumbs of the wealthy and figure out, well, where do they invest? And unfortunately, it led me right back to real estate, but it led me back to investing as the tortoise, not the hare.
Man, those are painful lessons. And what do they call that? Wisdom's tuition, I think is the other way I've put it. It's like, that's it. You have paid the tuition for that wisdom. So you came, it led you right back to real estate, which is funny. But of course, like you said, you decided to become the tortoise. But what does that mean to you?
Right. And let me be clear. When I say back to real estate, I mean for a large part of our portfolio. If you download the passive investor guide that I have on my website, it does show how 8% of the middle class has 8% of their wealth in alternative investments. Okay. The high income and ultra wealthy have 25 to 50% of their wealth in alternative investments. So I actually am about diversification, because in alternative investments, it's everything outside of Wall Street, right? It's real estate, maybe energy. We do energy deals as well. There's healthcare investments, right? There's lots of other kinds of investments, business equities, to build out a rounded portfolio. But the breadcrumbs led me back to a large portion, 25%, even at Tiger 21, of their portfolio is in real estate. And so for that, the tortoise but not the hare means buying for cash flow. It means buying existing construction. It means not speculating, not gambling, not sliding the big stack all on green 24 and spinning the wheel. So if you can buy an asset that cash flows, right, that means you're putting enough down on the asset that allows it to cash flow. And you've got to look at recession resilience. So we're looking in the best markets that have shown over time to have the best resilience, which oftentimes there's some of the cities in the southeastern states in Texas that are landlord friendly, that are tax advantaged and have had steady growth. And once you found a place like that, you're looking for diversified employment. You find a property that you can put a lot of capital down that'll cash flow. You got to see if it will cash flow even if vacancies drop to where it did in past recessions. Then you've got to build a financial foundation. I don't put a very little bit down on a personally guaranteed balloon payment loan. We do long-term debt or fixed interest debt or debt that is 3 to 5 years but has a rate cap. We bank, and with that rate cap, we make sure that if our interest rate does rise to that cap, that we can still cash flow. Again, means putting potentially even more down on the property or buying the right kind of property that can cash flow in those kind of situations. And so there's a lot that I just said there, and there's other layers of the onion to dig deep, but it comes down to the failure mode event analysis class that I took in mechanical engineering, where you look at all the failures you've seen, all the deals that come across my desk of operators that didn't have enough reserves, didn't put enough down, didn't have fixed debt, didn't have a low enough interest rate cap, didn't have replacement cost insurance in the case of a natural disaster, didn't have rent insurance, revenue insurance to replace their rents in the case that there was a time that what residents weren't paying. All these things combined, right? You can put together a high risk adjusted return, meaning it's not going to be the biggest return, but you can put together a deal that will perform very strongly, even in a down market.
I think that's incredibly compelling. Obviously you do as well, because this is what you guys are, this is your bread and butter right now. But I think to investors today, that's incredibly compelling. I don't know anybody right now. If you said, you know, if you took a random poll, and I'm just making this up, but I just can't imagine that if you took a random poll and said, hey, you know, in the next 5 years, do you predict economic just, you know, exuberance, like the markets are going to do great, people are going to do great. Like, I think everybody's kind of overall sentiment is that good things are not in store in the near term. And so positioning, it's just where we are. And so positioning yourself with these things, and you've mentioned, if you're listening to this show, I mean, go back, hit pause and go back and listen to the 20 things Patrick just mentioned, because they were all things that as you look at deals, you should be considering. But let's talk a little bit about the recessionary acquisition fund. I mean, I think one of the things you said is that, yeah, you're buying stuff for cash flow, you're buying stuff that's well positioned, but I think you're also seeing stuff right now that may have some hair on it. Is that correct inside of it, where you guys can come in, kind of rescue the deal and then move it on down the line? How does the recessionary acquisition fund work? There's the final question, if I eventually got it out.
Right. Well, the strategy in past years, say in the last 5 or 10 plus years for real estate sponsors, has been to buy something and then hold it for 3 to 5 years plus, and buy something that's a little bit below market that hasn't been renovated, and that you can renovate the units 10, 20 a month for, you know, 200 to 300 units, and then bring it above market. And that means you've got to buy a property. So you got to put up the equity for that. Then you got to put up the equity to renovate it, right? Which maybe it's another 50 or 100% of the equity you're raising to buy it. And then you got to hope that over the course of 3 to 5 years, the rents rise as you renovate and spend the money. And then you got to hope the building appreciates to an extent greater than the capital that you raised, greater than the capital that you raised for the CapEx or the renovations, and then produces a return beyond that. And what we're finding today is that in the inflationary environment, with interest rates going up, insurance going up, and taxes going up, with renovation costs being material supplies being delayed, labor being hard to find, that unfortunately it's not penciling. Why? Because when your expenses go up, interest rates go up, it draws down on your valuations. And so even though you're working real hard to improve the property in the long term, I don't know. So what's going to happen? So the strategy right now is not to pull out the crystal ball that we had of yesteryear and try and hope for 3, 5, and 7 years down the line. Me as an analyst, I know that in 2009 and 10, not me, but other real estate investors that made it very wealthy were those individuals that the assets transferred to during those times. They transferred away from the speculators, the gamblers like me back then, and they transferred to the people that made intelligent, articulated acquisitions at the right time. And so to really position yourself moving forward, you need to take off your old hat, put on a brand new hat, because the strategy to win in downturns, to find the upside of downturns, isn't in pulling out your crystal ball and for future speculation. It's in buying right and not hoping on long-term value add. So what I mean by that is there is a ton of deal flow right now, not like in 3 years or 5 years ago. There's a ton of deal flow right now where we know on the buy that we're getting a great deal. And we know very clearly going in today what that deal is. And we can move in cash to purchase it from a distressed operator, not a distressed asset necessarily. I mean, these are performing properties. We just bought a property at a 10 cap, right? I mean, it's pushing out 10% cash flow a year if you buy it all in cash, which we did. That's what a 10 cap means. It's amazing. I mean, it's a performing property, but it's distressed operators, individuals that didn't plan for interest rates rising, didn't plan for inflation, didn't have reserves on the sideline to deal with their tenants not paying during COVID. And when the rental assistance checks not stopped coming in, that and the eviction ban lifted, the evictions got backed up. They didn't plan for not having income, right? Maybe they had a natural disaster and they didn't have replacement cost insurance or revenue insurance to pay. So there's a bunch of reasons why right now today, there's a ton of distressed operators, distressed owners, not distressed assets, right? Needing to exit quickly. They need a source of relief. And so we can be that on the buy. And that's what we're doing. I mean, there's a case study of four properties that were done prior to us launching the Recessionary Acquisitions Fund that set the stage for this is exactly the strategy. We're going to rinse and repeat this. And within the Recessionary Acquisitions Fund, we just did our first asset. We did an all cash buy. We raised the capital immediately. We closed within 12 days. Incredible deal right off the bat. And what we're going to do is we're going to immediately refi out half our capital. So we're going to do 50% loan to value. That's that low leverage strategy I was telling you about. And we're going to buy a second asset within the fund. So we're not going to distribute refinances and sale event. Again, you got to take off your hat, put on a new one, new thinking cap today. Because normally one asset, you hold it, you cash flow, you refi, you get that refi as an investor. When it sells, you get the proceeds from sale. Not the case today. Why? Because we're not going to hold. We're going to buy it. We're going to refi, but we're going to keep that in the fund. Then we're going to buy a second asset within the fund. And then we're going to take the first asset and we're going to 1031 exchange it into a third asset within the fund. We're going to do this very quickly, right? We're already working on the refi. We're already lining up the second and the third acquisitions right now. Then with those two, we're going to create four, and then four becomes eight. We're going to do this at 6 to 12 month paces between property to property. And we're going to turn $100,000 investment from an accredited investor instead of putting it into one asset and holding it for 3 to 5 or 5 to 7 years and missing this entire buying window, this exciting time right now. You can invest $100,000 and we can put it to work in a dozen properties in the next 3 to 5 years. And so by doing that, each time we make a buy, we know the return. We're not hoping. And then we make one more step return, make the return on the buy. Then we make one more step return and one more step return. Instead of looking at that crystal ball, we just keep stepping forward to raise the returns.
I've got several questions on this front. One of them, it goes back to we'll start at kind of the end and work our way back to the beginning. You said what you'll do is you'll buy the asset in cash and then you'll refinance that at a 50% loan to value. And then you mentioned you're going to 1031 that into a second property. What's the point in refinancing it if you're going to sell it and 1031 it into another property?
So we can refinance very quickly. It's all about velocity of capital and diversification, right? So we can refinance very because we know we're getting a great buy. The minute we buy it, we can pull out half our capital. And we need to close quickly. It's a little bit like whack-a-mole on these deals. We do a lot of work up front. But the minute we do all the work front loaded to make sure it's a good deal. But the minute our due diligence funds become hard, we know that it's an asset we got to close on. And even in this asset, but from the 12 days that it took us to close, from the time that we finished due diligence, the owner was already starting to get antsy because he felt he left $1.3 million on the table. We believe he left $3 to $4 million on the table. So we have to move very quickly on these assets in order to get them across the finish line. So we're getting closing cash, the best basis we can, pull out the capital quickly, trade it forward, and then we'll move to take the base asset, the equity in the base asset after call it 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and then we'll trade it into the third asset.
Got it. Man, that's an advanced strategy. There's a few other questions on that just in the operations of this fund. So these operators, and again, your clarification I appreciate, which was that it's a distressed operator, not a distressed deal. You know, maybe they didn't have insurance. They've got hit with insurance premium increases. They've, like you said, they didn't have rate caps in place. Interest rates are killing them. All these different things that can happen to a distressed operator. It seems like you would incur those same increase in prices that they would. Maybe not on the interest rate side, because, well, actually, if you're refinancing it, yes, maybe at a lower interest rate, but all those still costs are going to be fixed and then passed on to you. How are you making this deal better than maybe what they are?
Well, let me give you an example. Okay, this first asset that we just bought in the fund, all right, it was a software developer that owned it living in the Bay, San Francisco Bay Area, all right? He inherited it from his father. And he spent 2 to 3 years virtually ignoring it, right? And during this time, he had the wrong kind of debt, right? So we saw his interest rates go wild. He saw the cash flow go all over the place. He doesn't know how to operate, or he's inexperienced. He's disinterested because he's interested in something else. In the meantime, he had tenants move out. And even with tenants moving out, which it got down to 60% occupancy, which he had brokers calling him. We spoke to the brokers, but he was disinterested in putting in the work to actually lease it up. During this time, this thing dropped to 60, this great property, great performing asset. And when we bought it with the cash price, we bought it, it was cash flowing at 10% and a 10 cap. So it's a performing asset. As you know, it's really hard to buy properties, regardless of how occupied it is. It's, at the end of the day, when we bought it, it's cash flow. There's only upside from there, right? As you lease it up, as you occupy it, right? And we were there, he had two other offers and they were all higher prices, but they weren't cash buys. They weren't going to move fast enough for him, right? And so that's an example of how we find these pockets of deals in these times when these people are disinterested and just throw their hands in there and they just want out quickly.
I think that's absolutely brilliant. I love that. The last question, unfortunately, we're out of time here today. And if you're listening to this and want to get a hold of Patrick, he's going to give his contact info here at the end. This strategy, I think, is brilliant. Not something we've heard a lot about, if any, taking it really at the angle you guys are right now here on the show. We interview a lot of people here. So this is really, really cool. I love what you guys are doing here. So tell me this. I mean, it seems like people would be just lined up for these deals. Buyers would be all over these opportunities you guys are finding. How are you finding such great deals?
So that's one of the really exciting parts is, so in normal, like, again, you got to take your old thinking cap off. You got to put on your new recessionary thinking cap. Okay. It's really tough to do deals right now as we did 3 to 5, 5 to 10 years ago, because the brokers have been whispering prices to these owners that are dramatically higher, right? 20, 50% higher than what these properties are worth now. And the brokers are now in this spot where they're trying to hang on to the seller, and they're trying to get the price down, but they've already set the stage at a losing battle to make this deal come through. So while we love brokers and we have a lot of great relationship with brokers, pretty much most of all of our assets and all of our engagement with the deals starts with the owner. And so we have this really cool, and we explain it a little bit on our website. We have this really cool acquisition engine, which uses intelligent software. We have a huge team of people to funnel through and identify all the highest likelihood distressed assets. We've got a bunch of really cool filters that help us identify which ones, outreach teams that reach out to them, and then we reach the owner directly. Now, sometimes we end up talking to a broker, but we reach the owner directly and have those conversations, and we make sure that they're the right kind of buyer for us, that are interested in moving quickly. There's some component of distress to them that allow them to exit at a great price, and they don't have a broker that's going to mass market this so that we can move very quickly and lock it up, because agility is the key to the game. Mm-hmm. Buy as much as you can, as quickly as you can, and trade to the next assets. And during this very short, narrow window of call it a year and a half, 2 years, where we see $1.5 trillion in debt coming due in commercial real estate, where we can snatch up as much as we can during this time.
I love it. Patrick, if our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
So if you want to learn more about the Recessionary Acquisition Fund, head over to PassiveInvestingMastery.com. PassiveInvestingMastery.com. We've got the Recessionary Acquisitions Fund and the Recessionary Debt Fund, really high cash flow play next to it that we're launching soon. And if you're interested in having a chat, set up a call with me. You can go to InvestOnMainStreet.com, and my calendar is there. You can set up a meeting. I'm happy to talk to you wherever you're at. One of the things that I love about what I do is I have plenty of time to, you know, talk to investors. When I make the time, that's what I love to do. And regardless of where you're at, I'm happy to get you pointed in the right direction. We do only allow $100,000 minimums with accredited investors only into our deals. But I know other operators that can't be out here soliciting and talking about their investments. I can point you to that work with non-accredited investors too. And I also have, I have a best-selling book. Would you like me to offer a copy of that out?
Please.
So, yeah, Persistence, Pivots, and Game Changers, Turning Challenges and Opportunities. I think I have a copy of it, right? It is just such a cool book. I did it with, in fact, an actual rock star. I co-authored it with a couple other people. Phil Collins, lead guitarist at Def Leppard, was one of them. It just an actual, I mean, it was so cool. There was NFL, NBA players, entrepreneurs, handful of us put together a book. And I tell my whole story, the ebbs and flows, the ruin, the rebuild, the pivots, all of it, until we landed here in Hawaii, where I'm at now. So I tell the whole story. I'd be happy to, I send out a signed hard copy just as a give back to others that were hardworking professionals that are looking for another option, right, to accelerate retirement. And so if it helps to inspire your journey along, investonmainstreet.com/book. That's the secret link. It's investonmainstreet.com/book. If you use the promo code How to Scale CRE, then we know you're not somebody random and that I legitimately offered it because we don't send it to anybody that just fills out the form. But I do sign them. I sign them and we ship off a signed hard copy. And if you want to schedule a meeting to chat, I'd love to talk to you and appreciate all your time today.
Awesome. Patrick, thank you so much for your time. This was awesome. You shared a wealth of knowledge and experience here with our listeners, as well as some awesome giveaways, that book. We'll share, of course, all of the links there in the show notes that you've shared with us today. And I certainly appreciate your time. Thank you again for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.